The reading can be found on page 32 of the Church Bibles and is taken from Genesis chapter 32. Page 32, Genesis chapter 32, beginning at verse 1. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I might find favour in your sight." And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he's coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him." Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people who were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking, "If Esau comes to one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape." And Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good,' I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, 'I will surely do you good, and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude.'" So he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him he took a present for his brother Esau: 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. Then he handed over to his servants every drove by itself, and said to his servants, "Pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove." He instructed the first, "When Esau my brother meets you and asks you, 'To whom do you belong? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you?' Then you shall say, 'They belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau. And moreover, he is behind us.'" He likewise instructed the second and the third and all who followed the droves, "You shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, 'Moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us.'" For he thought, "I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me, and afterwards I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me." So the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask me my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh.
Well, Lucy, thank you for reading. And you'll find an outline, just 3 points of where we're going tonight on the back of the notice sheet. If you wanted to look at that, you might find it helpful. Now, I was hoping, I kind of wanted, personally, to start this sermon by talking about Big Daddy and giant haystacks. But I can tell from the slightly sort of blank looks on your face, apart from just one or two, that you're too young, aren't you? Has anybody got it? A couple, yes. Saturday afternoon, ITV wrestling in the sort of mid-80s, brought to us live from Blackpool or somewhere. It had a certain sort of feel. It wasn't exactly the sort of WWF stuff you get on Sky these days. It wasn't quite as snazzy as that. But anyway, I can't, because you are all too young. Sits fondly in my memory, though, wrestling. I imagine we're not really into wrestling, actually. No, thought not, yeah. But I'd like to suggest we do like fighters. Not just fighters, actually, but winners. It doesn't take long to look at the blockbuster films, the TV serials. We love an action hero, don't we? We love the guy or the girl. Let's not forget Jennifer Garner in Alias. We love them, the person who goes into the fight, and they always come out the winner. The person who fights and wins, I'd suggest we kind of instinctively look up to them, we admire them, we'd quite like to be like them. I think the instinct to fight, especially when you're in trouble, or especially when there's something you want, the instinct to fight for it comes very naturally to us and runs very deeply in us. And that means we need to learn the lesson of the passage we've got tonight, because it's about a fight Jacob had. It's actually, I hope we'll see, a fight we're all involved in. And it's the most important fight of our lives, and it's a fight we really must learn how to win. But we win it in a very strange way. Let's start with point one, resisting God's grace, I've called it, fighting to win the blessing. Verse 22, let's jump in there. Verse 22. The same night, Jacob arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. It's not obvious why Jacob sends his family and possessions ahead of him, but it does echo what happened when Jacob left God's land, the promised land. I don't know if you remember, as he got into trouble with his brother Esau, who wanted to kill him, he runs away on his own, and as he leaves the land, God meets him and speaks with him. Well, now God has just told him it's time to return to the land. And so Jacob is on his way back. But just as he enters the land here, God again meets him. Although at first it's not obvious who the person is. A man wrestled with him. It's dark. The stranger kind of emerges out of the gloom. Might have thought he was a mugger or a robber, but Jacob hasn't got anything to take. Turns out he's interested in Jacob himself. And taking him on in a fight. And they fight and wrestle all night. We've had some hints that Jacob is a physically strong bloke. I don't know if you remember, he moved a stone from a well that normally takes many men to move. He did it by himself. And in this wrestling match, he's doing all right. They wrestle all night. And verse 25, the start of it, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob. He can't beat him. in sort of human terms, if you like, they're an even match, man for man, they're an even match. Now, what I want to suggest is that what's happening here, and as we go on we'll see this again and again, is like a snapshot or a summary of what's been happening throughout Jacob's life. See, all his life, Jacob has been a fighter. Not physically fighting so much, but battling with people to get what he wants, using his strength, his schemes, his ideas to get what he wants. He's fought with his brother, Esau, and got him to sell his birthright to him. We saw that a while ago. He's fought with his father, tricking him to give him the eldest son's blessing. He's fought with his uncle, Laban, fighting for the wife he wants and for cattle and flocks and prosperity. Jacob's been someone who all his life has been grabbing, fighting, wrestling, trying to get what he wants. There's a hint of it in our passage tonight. As I said, he's on his way back into the land, but that means facing his brother Esau. And last time they were together, Esau was trying to kill him. And so, at the start of our passage, verse 3, Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I might find favor in your sight." And the messengers returned to Jacob saying, "We came to your brother Esau and he is coming to meet you and there are 400 men with him." Now, it's not quite clear why Esau's coming with 400 men. It seems quite a lot to bring. It's not clear whether he's coming for a fight or a party. But Jacob understandably fears the worst. Verse 7, "Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed and divided the people who were with him, the flocks and herds and camels, into two camps, thinking if Esau comes to one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape." He's coming up with some schemes to try and sort something out. Verse 13, the same thing happens. He stayed there the night, and from what he had, he took a present for his brother Esau. And we don't get this long description of lots and lots of animals, and the servants are to take them and to give them to Esau. And the idea is, verse 20, halfway through, "For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me. And afterwards I shall see his face, perhaps he will accept me." In other words, he's trying to sort of buy Esau off. He's trying to sort of bribe him, be really lavish with him, and get him to accept him. Now, it's difficult to make a sort of judgment on this. Is this wrong of Jacob? Is this another of his scheming, wrestling tactics? It's not made explicit, so we can't be too clear. I think there are some indications. He's still scheming to get what he wants. What is clear, though, is throughout his life, Jacob has been fighting, working by himself, for himself, trying to get what he wants. It's a spirit that our culture admires today. It's the can-do attitude. It's Alan Sugar and the Apprentice, isn't it? It's the, you know, I can do it, I can make it happen. I'm the self-made man or woman, as it happens, who won. That's Jacob. Now, having said that much, that he's a fighter, I think it's worth thinking about exactly what he's fighting for. I've put on the sheet, I've said he's fighting to win the blessing, God's blessing. Let's remind ourselves what that is. God first made his promise of blessing to Abraham back earlier in Genesis. He promised him a place to live. He promised him lots of descendants, security, safety, prosperity, wealth, and at the center, a relationship with God. In the sweep of Genesis, really, God's blessing is nothing less than it's God promising a perfect world, really. The world's gone wrong. God's promising to bless, to put it right. Make everything right again. where work is successful and relationships are satisfying and life is happy and fulfilled and secure and safe. It's what people would often sort of call heaven, I think, or paradise. It's the dream the adverts offer you and that we all long for. That's what Jacob's after. The right wife, the prosperity, the security. In fact, that's what we're all after, isn't it? I don't think I know anybody who doesn't want that perfect life, heaven, paradise. The question is, how do you get it? And for all his life, Jacob has been trying to get it by himself, for himself. He's been fighting for it. Again, that's what many people do today. I will make my life what I want. I'll get the grades. I'll get the grades to go to university. I'll get the degree. I'll do the summer placement. I'll get the job. I'll pursue the career, achieve the salary. I'll find the relationships. I'll meet the right partner. I'll buy the house. I'll enjoy the holiday. And I'll do it all. I'll do it. I'll make it happen. That's the spirit of our culture, isn't it? You could sum it up by saying, I think people are working to build heaven here. That's what we want, isn't it? That fulfillment, that happy life, that blessed life. Fighting to win the blessing. It comes very naturally to us. Well, having said that as a sort of starting point, let's see how the fight continues under point two. God's work of grace in us. The wrestling match takes a pretty dramatic, having gone all night as a kind of even match, it takes a pretty dramatic turn in verse 25. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Now the word there for touched means touched. As it doesn't mean anything more than that. It means a light touch. Okay? Now that's pretty weird, isn't it? A light touch, you know, fingertip, little light touch. That's a pretty unusual wrestling move, I reckon. Do you know what I mean? I don't remember Big Daddy or Giant Haystacks ever doing the touch. Do you know what I mean? Gotcha, you know. But with this touch, his hip is dislocated. Man for man, they were equal. Turns out the stranger's not just a man. This is a supernatural wrestling move. This is divine power. And it disables Jacob. From this point on, the fight is over. We need to be clear about that, actually. I think it's a little confusing, because verse 26, the man says, let me go, the day is broken. And Jacob says, I will not let you go unless you bless me. It sounds like they're still evenly matched or something. There's still sort of some negotiation going on. But, well, I dislocated my shoulder once playing rugby. I was rather enthusiastic, thought I'd tackle this big bloke. Threw myself in. Came out of it in agony. I was just rolling on the ground. Rolled on the ground for a bit more. Got carried off to A&E, etc. But I tell you what I didn't do. I definitely didn't try and tackle him again that day. You know, I didn't carry on playing rugby. I was in no fit state for anything. And my point is simply, a dislocated hip, Jacob isn't fighting anymore. I mean, you need your hip to work to stand up, let alone wrestle. And if he wasn't holding on to this bloke, he'd be falling over. The fight is over here. Jacob with a God with a touch has broken Jacob. And his strength, his independence, his fight is taken away. And he's defeated. Now again, as I say, this incident sort of encapsulates what's been happening in Jacob's life. That is what God has been doing in Jacob's life. He's been teaching him or breaking him and his independent spirit. That's been the whole point. I'm sorry if you haven't been here, but just to refer back to where we've been, that's been the whole point of his time with Uncle Laban and the 20-year sort of boot camp experience he had as he got tricked and deceived and had a really hard time. God was teaching him, Jacob, you're not in charge, actually. You're not a self-made man. You can't build heaven here for yourself. And he learns that as he suffers and gets a taste of his own medicine. And actually, we've seen Jacob learn the lesson to some degree. Last week, as he leaves Laban, we saw him acknowledge the reason he has anything, flocks and prosperity and that sort of thing, wasn't because, he doesn't say, well done me, all my clever schemes have worked. He says, I only have these things because God has been with me. He's being broken. His independence is being broken. He's learning. God has given him these things. And we see that very clearly in this chapter, actually. In amongst his schemes, whatever we make of them, verse 9, we get this. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of the steadfast love and the faithfulness that you have shown your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. It's good, isn't it? It's a good prayer. And in many ways, it's a model prayer. He acknowledges he's not worthy of God's kindness. He remembers God's promise, God's command to go back to the land. And on the basis of these promises, he says, please help me. That's a sort of different sort of Jacob than the one we started with, isn't it? This isn't a sort of independent, I'll sort it out Jacob. This is a God-dependent, please deliver me sort of Jacob. And that process, that lesson, I think, is brought to a fulfillment in this fight, this wrestling match, as God, with a touch, breaks him and literally brings him to his knees. Verse 31 is very sort of poignant. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. We said Jacob is on the way back to the promised land. It's a very significant moment. Jacob is God's man, and God has promised to give him this blessing, and he's coming back to the promised land to receive the blessing. But God won't let him enter the land and get the blessing proud and independent and fighting. He can't bless people like that. So he works in Jacob to break him, and Jacob enters the land limping, broken, weak, his strength taken away. You know, sometimes my 3-year-old, who rather appropriately for this sermon is called Jacob, or confusingly possibly, I'll try and be clear which one's which. Jacob sometimes wants to do things by himself. You know, say he sees a packet of biscuits, he decides he not only wants the biscuits, he wants to open the packet of biscuits. Okay, so he grabs it and he starts to try and open it. He's not very good at opening biscuits. He's never going to do it. So he does that for a while. He's starting to get a bit frustrated. The problem is, if I try and help him, he gets very upset. Because as soon as I touch it, he's like, no, I want to do it. And maybe he thinks I'm going to take the biscuits away because I'm a sort of nasty father and that kind of thing. And so he just holds on to the whole thing more tightly. Now, let's say I'm not a nasty father, for the sake of argument for the moment. And let's say I'd love to give him a biscuit. I really want to give him a biscuit. In fact, that's why I bought the biscuits. They're his biscuits, you know. What am I to do? There he is. I'll do it. But he can't open them. Well, the only sort of option is for him to make, for me to make him accept my help. We enter a wrestling match, in fact. a little more evenly matched than you might imagine. And it probably involves some tears as I get my hands on the biscuits and get them out of his hand and take control, and he doesn't like it. He wants to be in charge. But finally, I'm in control, and now I open the biscuits. Say, Jacob, help yourself. Well, it's not a great illustration, but it's the sort of thing that's going on here. This Jacob is trying to get the blessing himself, in his own strength. I'll do it, he says. And so God comes to wrestle with him, to take charge. And actually, he has to break him. It involves tears. But he does it so he can then give Jacob the blessing. What's particularly struck me about this this week is what it says about how gracious God is. Often people think God, you know, isn't interested in us and needs persuading to do anything for us. But here it's the other way around. God wants to bless Jacob, but it's Jacob who needs persuading to kind of open his hands to receive the blessing. And so God goes to great lengths to teach and persuade and change Jacob, to sort of make him able to receive the gift. That's amazing grace, isn't it? That's not just grace that says, I'll offer you grace, I'll offer you a gift if you want it. It's grace that goes further and says, I'm offering you a gift, you're not going to receive it, I'm going to act in you to enable you to receive it. And clearly God thinks it's very important that we learn that lesson, that we are able to receive grace. In fact, he will spare no pains, no tears are too much to teach us this very valuable lesson. Well, God does the same with us. We're about to enter we are entering the season of exam results, aren't we? Final results coming out now. School results in a while. I was talking with someone recently who said a few years ago when their results came out, they'd worked very hard for the grades they thought they should get and wanted to get to the university place that they planned, etc., etc. But it didn't happen. Missed the grades. They said on reflection, as they sort of looked back at it, they could see they had a very independent spirit. I'm going to try and make my life what I want it to be. And God stepped in and said, I'm going to teach you something much more valuable, actually. I'm going to teach you to trust me. Much more important than your plans and your grades, actually. I'm going to teach you that you're not in charge, and I am. Maybe we face some, is there someone difficult in your office at work, someone that really you find really hard, but you can't avoid them? If we face some other trouble at work, sort of failure in our career, the promotion doesn't come. Maybe redundancy does come. Maybe we face disappointment in relationships. We can't seem to find the partner we want. All the friends, maybe friends let us down. Maybe we have trouble with health and illness. They're hard things, they're painful things. There's no getting away from that. But God is in charge of those things, and he uses them to teach us, to break us, and show us we're not in charge of the world. We can't build heaven here. And while there may be tears, it's wonderfully gracious of God to do it. Not just offering us grace, but acting graciously in us to make us able to receive grace. As he works something very precious in us. So he teaches us that he's God and we're not. And as I say, he does it ultimately that we might receive his grace, and that's number three. Receiving God's grace, winning the blessing by admitting defeat. Verse 26 again. Then the stranger said, "Let me go, for the day is broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Rather weirdly, Jacob keeps holding on to this bloke. I say weirdly because I think if someone dislocated my hip with a touch, I'd want to get away from them as fast as possible. I mean, they're dangerous, you know. They're very dangerous. But Jacob realizes, yes, this man is very powerful, supernaturally powerful. In fact, he's got the touch of the divine about him. He's someone who could bless me. In some ways, Jacob hasn't changed at all. He's desperate still to receive the blessing. And as he sees the opportunity, he goes for it. Bless me. I want that blessing. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with wanting the good things God has for us. The issue is how we try and get them. And the big difference this time, this is where Jacob has changed, is he doesn't fight, but he asks. Or, actually, I think he pleads. Now, I realize verse 26 doesn't immediately sound like pleading. I will not let you go unless you bless me. Sounds like coercion. But just remember who he's fighting, and that Jacob knows who he's fighting. This guy's only got to do the touch move again. Remember that one? And he'll dislocate some more joints of the body and just walk away. So if he wants to leave, he can leave. So what we've got is Jacob not sort of holding on to him in control, coercing him. Rather, we've got Jacob dislocated, broken, holding on to a man he knows could just break him again with a touch. And he's holding on saying, please bless me. It's more of a plea, you see. Holding on to someone he knows is more powerful and saying, please bless me. Later in the Bible, the prophet Hosea talks about this incident, and he describes it like this. He says, Jacob strove with God, he strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. Or you could say, he begged for grace. That's what's happening here. Jacob is pleading, begging for grace, for mercy. And so the man says, verse 27, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Now, in the Bible, people's names often sum up their character. So a change of name is a very significant thing. It's a change of character. And he was called Jacob, which meant, we've seen, deceiver or grasper. That's what he was like. He was this fighter. But now God has changed him. He's going to be called Israel. But what's a bit odd, though, is what Israel means. Israel means, you'll see from the footnote, is that God strives, or he strives with God. But we get the sense of it in the text. You will be called Israel, verse 28, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Now that's pretty weird, isn't it? I mean, just remind me, who won the fight here? Well, God did, didn't he? I mean, it was a pretty conclusive touch all over. Now he seems to be saying, you fought with God and with men and have prevailed. You've kind of won. But in what sense has he won? Well, I think Jacob has won by being defeated. Well, not just being defeated, by admitting defeat, being broken by God and admitting defeat and then pleading for grace. He's broken by God. He doesn't crawl away, though. He doesn't run away. He holds on to God and pleads for the blessing. I think that's the whole point of this thing. The way to victory, the way to win the blessing, is to submit to God, to admit defeat. Hey, you're in charge. You're God. It's your blessing. I give up. But please, have mercy. And give me the blessing. The thing is, though, for people who instinctively fight, that's a very hard lesson to learn. I mentioned Hosea refers to Jacob, this incident. Hosea was talking to Israel, of course, the nation that came from Jacob. And Israel needed to learn this lesson. In Hosea's day, Israel, they wanted the blessing. They wanted their crops to grow. They wanted many children. They wanted to be prosperous. And so they worshipped idols to try and make it happen. And they wanted security and they wanted protection from their enemies. And so they formed alliances with other nations to try and make it happen. They're just like Jacob. They want the blessing. They want that good life. They want the prosperity and all the rest of it. They want what God has promised to give them. But they try and get it themselves. They trust other things to get it. They use their own schemes and strength. And so Hosea says to them, remember Jacob, who strove with the angel and prevailed, who wept and sought his favor. He's saying, remember, the way to win with God is to be defeated by him. The way to win the blessing is to let him be in charge and beg for grace. And he goes on, remember Jacob, and so by the help of your God, return and hold fast to love and justice and wait continually for your God. Return to God, depending on God, and waiting on him to bless you. Well, as I said earlier, we are tempted to try and get God's blessing, the good life, by our own schemes and efforts. So I can just get the right job, the right relationship, all the rest of it. They can be idols that we trust, we look to give us what we want. And God is saying to us tonight, the way to winning the blessing is to stop fighting for it, to stop going to idols for it, and to admit defeat, give up and say, you're in charge, God. Please give it to me. And he promises us blessing. He promises us blessing now, in forgiveness and his presence with us and a place in his people and the many things he gives us, the good things he gives us today. And ultimately he promises us blessing in the future when we enter the true promised land and we live in that perfect world, heaven, what really is heaven, and enjoy every good thing God has got for us. God is very gracious. He has every blessing ready to pour out on us. But God won't give it to us. God won't let us enter heaven while we trust ourselves. We can only enter limping, broken. That's what becoming a Christian is all about. Letting God be in charge. And asking for his blessing. And that actually is what the Christian life's about. Because we go on learning the lesson more and more deeply. I heard someone this week who they had a very close friend. They relied on an awful lot. They shared everything with them. Couldn't imagine life without them. Then the friend got ill. Seriously ill. And then the friend died. It was a very, very painful time, of course. A breaking time. But they would testify, a very valuable time, as God taught them a very precious lesson, to wait and trust more deeply on God. I don't know what this week's got for you, what difficulties we'll face, work, relationships. what things we'll be frustrated in, what things won't go as we want. But in it all, let's remember God is gracious, and let's see his gracious hand teaching us, changing us, breaking us where we need it. Leading us to acknowledge, to know more deeply he's in charge. And let's join in with him. Let's not keep fighting. Give up the fight. Give up the idols. And submit to him and know he will bless us. He's promised to bless us. He will give us everything one day. Let's remember the way to win with God is to accept defeat. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we do praise you that you are a faithful God and so gracious that you would not only offer us your grace but act in us to get us to receive your grace. Please open our eyes to all you are, all you do in our lives, and lead us to that greater and deeper submission and trust in you. And we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.